Okay, there we go. All right, since it's a work session, I don't bang the gavel, so I apologize for you, me not banging y'all into order. But I will go ahead and call our February 9th, 2026 work session to order. We have one major item on our agenda, which is the discussion around our transmission line needs. And then we have an opportunity to go into closed session. I will make a note that if we go into closed session, council will go into another room outside of this room, so y'all can hang out here, because we can then come back to this room to continue open session before we end the meeting. So I just say that for those of you who are sitting in the audience or watching online to come back in so that you know we are going to come back to this space. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and kick this over to Aaron Keyes, our director of the utilities. So Aaron, take it away.
Well, good evening. Again, I'm Aaron Keyes, the Utilities Director. I have a number of staff with me here tonight. Gwen Corches, our Assistant Director for Electric, David Storvik, our Electric Engineering Manager, and Eric Wirtz, our Electric Engineering Supervisor. And we are here to talk about the transmission line project. So why does Columbia need this transmission line project? To continue to provide safe, reliable, and cost-effective power to the City of Columbia electric customers, we need a 161 kilovolt transmission line that connects Purchase Creek Substation to Grindstone Substation. The need for this transmission line will not go away. The need for the transmission line project will only continue to grow as our city grows and as our electrical load grows. The transmission line will benefit all customers of Columbia, residential, commercial, industrial. The transmission line will benefit the importing of renewable energy, and it will benefit long-term reliability. The dozens of other routes and options that have been studied provide less reliability and have significantly more costs than the two that are proposed. Staff does not believe that load shedding or rolling blackouts are an acceptable solution. Load shed will always be a potential, even with a new transmission line. We acknowledge that load shedding is a small risk at this time, but that risk continues to increase with the difficult conditions in energy markets, very significant power supply challenges in Missouri, and overall lack of electric infrastructure in our state. So when a severe cold snap or hot spell happens and our system has to shed load, many of our residents will be impacted. And once that single issue resolves and then customers demand that we fix that problem, it will take about 8 to 10 years and be more expensive than it is now. Our staff takes a lot of pride in providing the best possible and most reliable solutions for our community that we're serving. And we'd like to do so before an event like that occurs. Staff recommends the Vauder School Nifong Grindstone route as the most cost-effective, efficient, reliable, and overall best option to construct. There are people unhappy with that proposed location and the impacts. That will not change. It doesn't matter what location gets chosen. Wherever we locate this transmission line, there will be some people unhappy about the location and the impacts. Staff is evaluating costs and risks. This project is for the reliability of the entire Columbia system, including our residential customers and our commercial and industrial customers that provide the jobs and services for this entire community. This project also impacts all of our closest electric neighbors, the University of Missouri, Fulton, and Boone Electric and Central Electric. In 2024, staff revisited with council a request to proceed with a transmission line project from Purchase Substation to Grindstone Substation. At that time, staff was directed to update the cost estimates for Vauder School Nifong Grindstone route and the Chapel Hill route. To provide a reasonable estimate, the consultant had to perform some significant design work to develop the construction of material costs. We are here tonight providing these estimates. Knowing that we have some council members that were not part of the last council work session, we plan to provide a short historical summary prior to discussing the difference between the two routes. It is our hope tonight that you will direct us to proceed with a transmission line route. Directing us to proceed means that we will restart the entire public improvement process, including public meetings and a public hearing. Staff understands that no amount of public meetings or public hearing is going to bring consensus, but we're recommending the route that reduces the most risks and is the most cost-effective and reliable solution. We have the ability and the information to go into a closed session this evening if you wish to go over the specific risks to our system, since there's a few members that may not be aware of those. So now I'm going to turn it over to Eric Wirtz, our engineering supervisor for electric, to go over the history and discuss in more detail each of the options and the estimates.
Hello, my name is Eric Wirtz. I am a professional engineer. I've been with the city for 12 years in March, and this transmission line project has been in my area of discussion for that entire 12 years. So I'm very familiar with most of the aspects of this project. I invite you to please ask questions as I go through the presentation instead of waiting and asking at the end. There might be some relevant details that I can share at the moment instead of at the end.
Then if I can, really quick, I think one thing I'm going to look to, because I know there are some aspects of this discussion that are the sort of things that would be in a closed session because it's sensitive nature of material. Can I ask that you, Nancy or Aaron, if that sort of comes up to one of us, that you stop us?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
That's all I ask.
Sure.
Thank you.
So we're going to go over the two routes that are proposed and the cost comparison right up front, since that's what was asked at the last work session. Then we'll backtrack and go over the history and the risks. And when we start with the risks, that's when the opportunity to go into closed session. I can be very general describing the risks. It's when we get into very specifics that requires a closed session. We'll go over the route details, and then we'll have the opportunity for discussion. These are the two transmission line options available. The blue route, it is co-located with a 69 kilovolt transmission line that already exists, connecting Grindstone, Hinkson Creek, and Perchy Creek. This line would be constructed on the same poles. We would rebuild the line so that the two lines would share the same poles. The green line is the Vauder School option, which follows the original, if you're up on your history, the original option A route. We have omitted the Mill Creek substation from this project for your consideration. Would not ever promise to never bring Mill Creek substation before you later on, but that is not a part of this project.
That because it's not needed, Eric, or because we don't have the money to pay for it?
It's needed, but not immediately. And I ask Aaron budget questions.
Right. And so when we weren't doing the transmission line project, we had a bunch of bond money we used, and we need to use that bond. The bonds that actually were issued, we need to use those funds in a timely manner. So instead of the Mill Creek substation, we use those monies to upgrade two other substations that would help support our system in general. So we're doing upgrades right now to Perchy Substation and Bolstead Substation. So that's where we're spending those bond monies that were already issued. That, again, supports the entire system. Ultimately, Eric's right, we will probably want a substation at that Mill Creek location that we already had planned. We still own that property. We can do it in the future, but it's a large expense. and the transmission line is the focus at this point. Okay.
And then I have a follow-up question to that. You started off the presentation by saying these are our two options. And you had originally, and I'm sorry to make you go back to the previous work session we had, you had originally looked at some of the other options that we had potentially discussed, the Ameren relationship about improving that one, as well as something on the north side, and I can't remember all the names.
Right.
So if you could touch on those, that would be useful to know.
So we went through a good portion of the alphabet with options. They were each evaluated by our planning engineer, and a number of them were evaluated by a consultant. And some of the ones that made it farther in the evaluation process are highlighted on the are mentioned on the sheet that you that Gwen handed you. Of significant, option B was presented back in 2016.
2012.
Okay, a while ago. And option E was presented back in 2017. Those were found to be of less value. So while each of those options would eliminate the need for load shed, the cost was higher, and we found that another transmission project might be needed sooner. So if we had built one of those options, we may be coming back to you in 10 years for another transmission project instead of 20, for instance.
So since like 2012, we've looked at a number of different transmission line options, and I don't want to go through the alphabet on them because I remember the confusion about that. But we've looked going south, going north, going through Chapel Hill, going through the county.
Yes.
Yes.
You've looked at a number. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Nick.
Just back to Mill Creek. You're basically saying that the transmission line is of greater importance right now than Mill Creek is. And with the limited resources, we need to be putting our resources in the transmission line.
We had previously purchased the equipment for Mill Creek Substation,
yeah.
And that was tasked to go to Bolstead. And so that equipment has been put into service or is being put into service. So we don't have the equipment, so we'd have to probably request more funds. It's that upgrade was still very big, very useful to the electric system.
As a whole.
It put off the need for Mill Creek, and you're right, it's just about the transmission.
Okay, thanks.
Quick question, the Bolstead substation, I don't see it on this map. Where is it in relation to this?
Bolstead's at the far northeast.
Okay.
It's near the landfill.
Okay, I see it. Thank you.
Yeah, Jackie.
Just for clarification, you said that the Vauder School Nifong route, that was the old option A?
Yes.
Okay. And that option was rejected by council and the groups that they put together?
It was approved by council, and we started the construction, and council, and he'll go over this in the history,
okay,
if you want to wait for that.
I can wait. Thank you.
Okay.
We included this slide to show a little bit of an area of imagery. We're going to zoom in a little bit later in the presentation. This is the cost that we came up over the past year. The transmission estimate was provided by Black & Veatch. The distribution was an in-house estimate. I would say that the transmission estimates, we contracted with Black & Veatch for a 90% estimate. So it's pretty good. The distribution, those values are less certain. The work on the distribution, does not include Boone Electric. There are several Boone Electric circuits along Vauder School and Scott Boulevard. The distribution is to, that work is to put that distribution underground before we construct the transmission line. When we first started this project in 2012, we had promised that any distribution circuits in the path of the new transmission would be undergrounded. That's this cost. The distribution along the Chapel Hill route, those circuits share the poles with the 69 kV line. It is required that we underground those lines over a period of however long it takes before we begin construction of the transmission line to ensure that the customers that live along that route maintain their electric during that time.
Yeah, Nick?
I just want to be sure about the cost here, and this is a historic question too. Who provided these numbers for Chapel Hill and Vauder School?
On the transmission, that was Black and Veatch, and that was done in the past year.
Okay, so these are more recent numbers than what we have in Dave Sorrell's memo that's also attached.
Yes, we were directed, the memo and the work session that we had in 2024, council directed staff to come back with updated cost estimates. So that's what this is. This is the updated cost estimate.
A significant update.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Valerie.
Thanks. You said we contracted for a 90% cost estimate. Does that have a shelf life with it? How long do we expect that to be accurate?
Not long, the way prices are going up. I mean, the change in material costs alone have been significant in the last 5 years.
So as I mentioned earlier, these numbers do not include the Mill Creek substation, and we added to the slide the remaining bond authority. That bond was approved by the voters in 2015, which is also on your provided timeline.
So when that was approved by the election, it was option A, or the Vauder School? That was what was approved in the bond. Is that correct? Or did it have a particular transmission line?
That's what was advertised during the bond election process, was that we were going to move forward with option A transmission line project. In the actual bond agreement that we have with the bonding agency, it just talks about a transmission line, substations, you know, electrical work, that sort of thing.
When it appeared on the ballot, what was on the ballot?
Just the transmission line.
So the ballot language is always generic.
Right.
Okay. So what they're talking about are the promotional materials, basically, when they went out and started talking to the public about what was the proceeds of the bond issue would be used for.
Okay. So the conversation was around this particular route.
Correct.
So the ballot didn't have that specific language in it.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Betsy.
Could I just ask if we could just call it the Vauder School Road or the Chapel Hill line and not have to go with the A, the B, the B1, the A3, whatever? Because I just remember that being massively confusing. So if we could just, it is.
The two we have in front of us are Vauder and
right.
Chapel
Hill. Those are the two we have.
Sounds
so
good.
If we could just.
Thanks you.
That is my intention.
That way, it'd be great. Thank you.
So a little bit of the history. Actually, doing research this afternoon in response to Mr. Foster's question, I think that we got the years wrong on the first two bullets. The transmission line for the Vauder School route that included Mills Creek substation was proposed in 2013, not 2016. And in 2013, we began a public information campaign surrounding that leading up to the bond election. The In leading up to that, we've gone over it a lot. Many routes other than what I've highlighted were studied. Council paused the project after a public hearing in 2016. And I think that is January.
Well, so in 2013, council approved us moving forward with the project, and staff was actively moving forward with a transmission line project along the Vauder School route. And it was in 2016 that council requested an additional public hearing. And that's when the project was put on pause.
So there was a three-year period in which work was being done on this?
Yes.
And was that design work at that point?
Yes, that was survey work, design work, geotechnical investigation work.
The ground had been broken.
And procurement. We purchased two transformers.
Right.
And two,
which has since been used.
Which has since been used at Bolstead.
Okay.
And that was, I know that the city went out and said to folks, what kind of transmission line poles would you like? And they were having interested parties meetings about that. And that appeared to be when everybody all of a sudden realized that this transmission line was actually where it was actually going. And they seemed to not have, although you'd had interested parties meetings, there were a lot of people who seemed to have not heard about this at all. As somebody who sat through that 2016 public hearing, you know, it was like sort of like the public hearing we had last Monday night, except like twice as long, you know, with people that were upset about everything. But when we paused it, I don't think any of us, and at least I didn't anticipate that we wouldn't see it again for 9 years.
So at that time, and I think, I know we're getting a little bit detailed here, but I think it's important. This has been around for a long time, mm-hmm. and, you know, it needs to move forward one way or another. So understanding when things happened and why they happened is really important moving forward here, as any of those things might move, any of those reasons, for instance, of opposition or whatever, will also move forward, I can assume. So it's really important to know when things happened and what the content of those conversations were at the time.
I think I would add, besides it being important to know the history of it, is the lessons learned from it. One of the things that we heard often was, you mentioned the interested parties meeting about this. One of the things we've heard often is that we've sent it to customers. And so to understand what about residents that are maybe not customers of water and light, because that was part of the conversation. So answering that question
right. That
somebody has raised, which is that we informed customers of Water and Light, but maybe not customers of Boone Electric that were in the geographic. So if you can respond to that concern that we've heard, or at least been told. And then also, like, going forward, you said we're going to start it again. Regardless of what we do, we're about to send out messages. Who are we sending out these postcards to?
Sure. And looking back at the 2016 memo that was sent to council, it kind of outlines some of the public outreach that happened. And this is even prior to the bond election. There were multiple meetings, multiple mailings, and then some of the meetings, there were some meetings for the areas that were directly impacted. So our typical meeting procedure is we do notify the neighbors that are immediately adjacent to construction. So those people were definitely notified. Now, whether or not some of the neighbors that maybe live, you know, 400 meters or further away from the line, they may not have been directly notified about an interested parties meeting. But all the adjacent property owners were notified, whether they were Boone Electric customers or City of Columbia customers. And there were multiple different kinds of meetings that were held. And I don't remember them off the top of my head. I would have to read through and send a summary. But yes, as part of the outreach for this, we will again have to have multiple meetings on this. We're not going to be able to do one open house style meeting or anything like that. This is going to require some significant public outreach.
Yeah, Nick.
So it sounds like, and Betsy, you might be able to answer this, that a lot of the opposition was aesthetic in nature. It was about the kinds of poles that it was going to require to put this line up, is my impression. No? where they were going to be?
Well, yes, but where they were going to be, how it was going to affect property values, if it was going to cause cancer or other medical problems, mm-hmm. if it was going to affect property values again. People had run into, they'd asked for, I think Boone Hospital had asked for a variance to come closer to the road when they built one of their senior living places over there. And then they were like, well, that's going to be too close to our senior living place. And it's like, well, we've been working on this transmission line forever. You know, right. So there were multiple things, but it was just, you know, a never-ending stream of people.
So was it 2016 when there was a, when council put a pause on that one, on Vauder School? Then the expectation was that, again, you might be able to answer this better. The expectation was that at that point, other options might be explored. Is mm-hmm. that right? So the idea was not to pause it to kill it, but to pause it in light of the possibility of other things.
Of another line. I mean, at that point, there was the ABC. There were three or four different lines, and although this was the one that the city recommended, you know, you could have gone south. I mean, there were other theoretical options until we looked in those more closely and got a lot of pushback from those property owners. Or, you know, Ameren's like, well, you can use the lines north of us if you want. You're going to have to get your own easements. And it was like, well, if the idea is to have these things spread out, that's not very helpful.
So there has been a process since that time to explore other options, and there were studies done and so forth.
Including the next thing they'll talk about, that integrated electric resource master plan.
Right, okay.
Quick question, a little bit off topic, and if you don't know the exact answer, a ballpark will suffice. The existing line up Chapel Hill, when was that constructed?
The distribution line?
Earlier?
The one they're looking at piggybacking off of is...
It's a distribution now, but to potentially upgrade it to transmission, that one?
No, it is.
It's a 69 kilovolt transmission.
But not a 161, sorry.
Not a 161.
Right, not a 161. But is it that far? Is it that old?
I would expect it would be the 60s or 70s.
Yeah, that's what we're guessing, the 60s. But we don't know.
Older neighborhood.
Yeah.
A lot of that housing went in.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
So, as Dr. Peters mentioned, council convened an integrated electric resource and master plan task force, and they operated from 2019, had a nice little break around COVID, and presented their report in 2022, and their recommendation was for the Chapel Hill route. And that information on that route came from members of the task force and was evaluated by the consultant for the task force, which was Siemens. And then we had a couple of additional work sessions with council, and during the last council work session, you asked for an upgraded cost comparison between the Chapel Hill route and the Vauder School route. And that was in 2024, at the very end of 2024. And now here we are.
Can I ask a question about that? Is that typical timing to expect?
About a year to get the estimate?
Yeah, a year and plus some, because wasn't it like October that we were
talking
about?
Right, so it took a little while to negotiate the contract, and then they basically had to design the project to get this level of cost estimate.
Does that mean we saved money on the design? Oh, your face says no. Okay. All right. So this is typical of a cost estimate.
For this level of detail, for this confidence value in this number, okay. Yes. Now, the undergrounding number, which... In my mind, we forgot to put that on the slide.
I was going to mention that at the so Black and Beach estimated a 3 to 5 times multiplier if we were going to underground the transmission.
But
as staff, we believe it'll be more like 5 to 8 times multiplier.
Yeah, and their confidence level in that is much less than what it is in the overhead.
Undergrounding the whole thing?
Undergrounding the whole thing.
Okay.
Can I ask a quick question? I'm sorry to be naive about this. You know, it's just part of the, looking back at the minutes from that really long meeting that Betsy had to attend, part of the conversation was around, near schools or near the health clinic. So, is that ever an option to underground in certain locations because of proximity of certain facilities nearby? Is that ever, and I understand that adds to the cost, but just asking whether or not that's ever done.
Always an option.
It's done in very urban areas where there's just no room.
Yeah.
It depends on what the goal of undergrounding is. If it's aesthetic, I don't consider it valuable. If it's concern about RF, it brings the lines closer to people.
Okay.
And the dirt does not significantly attenuate that.
Oh, Nick would like you to say that RF is radiation frequency.
You don't have to say it now.
I said it now. Okay. I think, is there ever a need to do it because of concern over, just if we think about what we just saw in 2 weeks ago, storms happening in Tennessee and other places where, undergrounding for some of them would have potentially put their grid back online sooner than the 25,000 customers that were without power. So I didn't know, is that ever a consideration in the cost?
You could consider it. Again, it's 3 to 5 times.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
We're putting up metal poles. They'll sustain some pretty significant storms.
Yeah.
I think that was probably another question from that public hearing was about undergrounding, but the cost is impressive.
You can go on. Sorry. Thank you.
Messing with your...
Hey, Eric said to ask questions at any time.
No, you guys are fine.
And I follow directions. Well,
this is great. I like it. So we're going to talk about risk a little bit. I'm going to kind of cruise through the slide and get to the map. We've had less load growth recently than we anticipated back in 2007 when this project was identified. So it was a little less urgent, but we are starting to see, again, significant growth. And that could be, it's a potential when it comes to electric vehicles, electrification, or just general growth in the area where people are choosing to live.
Nick has a question.
I have a lot of questions, I guess. But I'm not going to apologize for it, Some of the concerns, other concerns have been raised is about whether or not this particular transmission line is important or should be prioritized in light of our growth in other parts of the city, particularly the Northeast. And I see, we're looking at costs increasing and that, load is not increased as much as anticipated, but what about that issue where we're going to need the electricity as we grow, because we will grow in different parts of the city?
I am going to delay the answer to that for
about
a couple minutes.
Put a pin in it, that's fine.
Right, when we get to the map, it'll make more sense.
All right, so we've been approached by various firms about various customers, both various customers about firm capacity requests. These are industrial level customers who want to import quite a bit of power. Our general risk is during summer afternoons. We are a summer peaking utility between 2 and 8 p.m. So it's when people get off work and turn on their air conditioner and start cooking dinner, watching TV. Those are the high load times, and it's generally between 2 and 8. When we have a peak, it's usually around 5 p.m. And we talked a little bit about long lead times on the transmission project. If we get started, it's going to be a 10-year process. And as Aaron mentioned, the costs are not as certain as we would like. And then we discussed a little earlier about contingencies that can lead to load shedding. So in the map, this map, it's a little busy. The red line is the electric service territory. It does not match the city limits. The city limits is the black line, and each of the wards is outlined here. Sorry about that. Hey, turn off your phone, Eric. The green line is 161 kilovolt transmission lines. The orange line are 69 kV transmission lines. And these are all existing and doesn't show any of the proposed routes. You'll notice that Perchy Creek has a single 161 kilovolt transmission line leading to it. Our primary goal with this project is to connect that substation to another green line. The closest place where a green line exists is Grindstone Substation. We have discussed other options that connect that Perchy Creek substation to Grindstone, various routes, going to Bolstead, which is farther away. But the fact that a 161 kV transmission line exists up and down the east side of Columbia generally means that any growth there, we can accommodate with our existing transmission. The concern is on the west, and particularly the southwest portion of Columbia, any growth there. When this project was identified, there was a lot of growth happening there, and there continues to be. Any growth that would fix, that would help in the southwest will also help in the northwest, because the Perchy Creek substation serves a good portion of the northwest along with Harmony Branch. The goal is, you'll notice that the 161 system is separated. We would like to join them together. It's analogous to trying to get across town on a two-lane road instead of taking Stadium. When Perchy Creek, when we want to import power from the west, which is generally where a lot of our wind imports come from, it will want to travel to Perchy Creek and travel across the 69 system to the east side of town. Having a bigger path, a better path for that power is beneficial if we want to continue to import those. The major item that prevents that from being a problem is the existence of our power plants at the Columbia Energy Center and the power plant. We have 130 megawatts of production that are gas turbines at CEC, which is located next to Bolstead, and 45 at the power plant, and those were both natural gas. We are right in the middle of an integrated resource plan where we're discussing this and bringing this, those questions about how to proceed with those units to you in May. But decisions on our internal power supply affect decisions on our transmission and vice versa. The presence of those power plants and our ability to turn them on when needed directs the wind power around the city. It's like, here's a source, we're gonna go around it, and there are paths to go around it. If we don't have those on, it wants to flow through the city, if that makes sense. We've had a number of issues where we've been denied maintenance requests by MISO. MISO is our reliability coordinator, where we wanted to take 161 out of service to do our required maintenance, and we've had trouble getting those outages because there's not enough redundancy in our 161 system also. the particular instances of outages that
Eric,
lead...
I'm sorry, can I pause you really quick on that? Is that because of it being a weather-related incident? Because I know you mentioned recently in that post about asking resident customers to conserve because we were being asked to, like, kind of turn on everything, that we had had a planned takedown for maintenance that we were delaying because of that. So we've requested to take down for maintenance, but been denied it because of our redundancy.
So that incident, because of the very cold weather, we were doing some maintenance work, and I believe that was on our 69 transmission line. It was planned maintenance work. In normal days, it's not a problem for us to do some of that maintenance work, but because it was going to be so cold, they wanted to be sure that anything that could be operational was operational, so that power could flow freely everywhere it needed to get to during that very cold spell. We were operating all of our units during that very cold spell, and that was to not only support Columbia, but to support our region. It wasn't because, and we were asking people to conserve for the benefit of the whole region, not because we were having internal problems, but to benefit the entire grid was why we were asking people to conserve, because things that happen elsewhere impact us, and things that happen here impact other people. So we're all definitely connected with this electric grid. So that was that instance. What Eric's talking about is when we're like in the summertime or certain times when we want to do maintenance work that we need to do on the larger 161 transmission line, sometimes MISO tells us, no, you can't do that outage right now. And so it makes us delay doing our own maintenance work, which in turn impacts long-term reliability. Whereas if we had more options, more 161 lines through town, then we would have the ability to stay on track with our maintenance.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know if that helped.
Yeah, it did. Okay. That was correct. So most of our maintenance is done in the spring and fall.
Low load
times.
Yeah.
So we've talked about a little bit about load shed. There are particular contingencies that can lead to load shed. Discussing those specific contingencies would be the topic of the closed session. So if you want to do that, if you want to do that now, we can. If you want me to continue and we can readdress it later, we can. I don't have a plan.
Yeah. Could really use a plan for this one. Don has a question, and then Aaron, I'll look to you on kind of guidance on whether or not to go into closed and then come back to this.
Right.
So Don, question.
Yeah, that was my question is, are there other items in the presentation that we could possibly go into closed session for? I would rather have one closed session than in and out.
This is the opportunity for the closed session where we talk about the specific risks and the specific load shed.
Right, but we're saying we can skip ahead in the presentation and then come back to this for
sure. Because after this, we're just talking about the specific routes and the details about the routes and then back to the estimate.
Let's do that, and then we can come. Yep. Then I can move us into closed.
So this is another illustration of the routes, just so we were reminded what the routes were. These are the poles that were identified by Black and Veatch, the consultant who did the estimate for Chapel Hill. This is a tandem structure. This is the most numerous of the poles that we would see along Chapel Hill. The corner structure, this is one that we would see as it turns the corner up Scott Boulevard and maybe a couple other areas along the route, depending on the specific design. This is a zoomed in view of an area near Chapel Hill and Forum. One of the particular challenges of this transmission path is that it does not follow the road. It cuts across parking lots, businesses, streets, front yards, backyards, and is very close to some homes. This continues along through the forested area south of Chapel Hill. And this is where it turns up Chapel Hill onto Scott Boulevard. Both routes are located in the same area, the same path, once you get north of Chapel Hill up to Perchy Creek Substation. We've included a couple of, these are just Google Street views of particularly challenging areas. If you kind of use your imagination to replace this pole in that person's front yard with one from the illustration schematic.
And this is the current Chapel Hill
This line? Exists, yes.
Okay.
This is another one out somebody's back window. There's a number of distribution circuits on there that shows kind of why the cost was so high for undergrounding. There's a number of circuits there on that pole. This is another view of that actually on Chapel Hill traveling, looking towards the west. This is the path again. We're going to go over the green path now, the Vauder School path. I don't know if anyone noticed the Vauder School path is just slightly longer, half a mile longer. Didn't mention that before. Oops.
And a note on the Chapel Hill route is those transmission line poles, if they are indeed from the 60s or 70s, if we go the other route, we're still going to need to come through and replace those poles on the Chapel Hill route. But it's not as disruptive replacing a pole as it would be putting in a brand new transmission line. So, because we can do the poles like one at a time, whereas the transmission line, it's you'll have to do sections at a time. So,
can you clarify? We're going to have to update the Chapel Hill regardless.
Update the poles. We need to replace the poles. They're getting past their useful life.
Okay. So just, but not necessarily the lines, but
right, not the lines themselves, but the poles we would need to update.
Yeah. No.
And this is in light of like the event we had, the tornado, and we did lose some poles in that case. These were probably of about the same vintage, I'm guessing.
Could be. Yeah, we do inspect the poles regularly, and if there's one that's, you know, it needs immediate attention, we take care of it. But, you know, just as a matter of updating and maintaining your infrastructure, you try to replace it before it gets that bad.
Sure.
Can you also clarify, when you talked about the line would be, like, cutting through parking lots and businesses and backyards, would there be any additional poles placed, or is it just replacing the poles in their current locations with different structures? So if we went with Chapel Hill, are we going to be putting a new something in someone's backyard?
Rated farther. So the poles wouldn't go exactly in the same place. They will be offset somewhat.
So that might cross a property line or...
Right. It may be in a new location that somebody hasn't seen before.
Okay.
And they're bigger? Are these larger poles?
Yes. Taller.
So again, much more upheaval.
Disruptive.
Disruption, whatever, to put in the new poles than to replace the existing poles one at a time.
Yes.
Okay.
So this pole structure was identified for the Vauder School route. The idea here is that the foundation would be in an easement, but the lines are hanging out to the side. Those would hang over the right of way, so that they're as far away from property as we can possibly get them. This is near Bethel and Nifong.
Eric Valerie had a question.
I was just gonna ask, since we didn't see that kind of graphic in the slides for the previous ones, are you not able to use that style pole on the Chapel Hill route?
So since the line does not go over a right-of-way, it's all easement. So in instances where here it's possible that we might be able to use that, but since it's a double circuited route, in order to maintain the weight distribution, we have to put one on one side and one on the other.
What about the example in somebody's front yard? That potentially,
so the one in somebody's front yard is where you, that's factor. Why you have to use the pole where it's on both sides, because you have an easement there and you have to stay in the middle of the easement. In this example that you're showing, you could hang it over on the one side.
That I got from the line on the map. I'm asking the one that it looked like it was in somebody's front yard, but over a cul-de-sac.
Right, for that one pole, but there's another pole behind it, right?
Yeah. So somebody's backyard, I'm assuming.
Right, and so you're probably not going to want to change poles in a straight line.
Got it.
So this alignment, the green line, uses the old option A alignment that was identified by that construction company. This is Bethel and Nifong and up at Forum and Nifong, Bedford Walk and Boone Hospital South. This is at Sinclair, close to Mill Creek Elementary. And then Scott Boulevard. And there's a couple of street views here. One of the poles was identified to go right by Bedford Walk, which would be right behind that car. And then you can kind of use your imagination, another pole here in front of Boone Hospital South. And here the alignment switches sides of the road and goes onto the north side. The alignment is not set in stone. We can redo the alignment. This is just kind of the alignment we chose for the illustration.
When he says alignment, whether it's on the north side of the street or the south side of the street, we're not going to want to zigzag, obviously, but, you know, we can stay on one side for a period and switch.
In this example, that is a distribution line?
That is a distribution.
And so we would be then doing a transmission line up top and distribution lines below, like sharing a pole with both?
We would probably underground this distribution and rebuild part of this pole. I think part of it is Boone Electric and part of it is ours. We'd have to reach an agreement with Boone exactly what they wanted. In the original, long, long ago, we were going to underground Boone Electric as well. They do not desire that their lines be undergrounded. So we'd have to come up with something. That would be part of the public improvement process to nail exactly what that is down.
And that's just a clarification. That was the Sinclair Road roundabout.
That was the Sinclair roundabout. Okay. Mill Creek Elementary is to the right.
And Woodcrest Chapel.
Woodcrest Chapel's okay. in the view.
So if I understand you correctly, this picture here, that wooden pole would go away, and those lines would be undergrounded because they're distribution lines. And then the only thing that would be there would be the taller transmission line. Is that correct?
I would say most likely. With the possible
given what we can work out with Boone Electric, understand.
And what we can move out with Boone Electric.
And there are communication lines on there, so the, you know, Brightspeed and those folks.
So. Spaghetti gets deeper and deeper.
It does.
This is actually the last slide. This is, again, the cost comparison. It's the same as the first one.
So,
questions for staff before we go into discussions around load shedding in closed session. Yeah, Don, and then Betsy, and then Nick.
So if this Vardar's between these two, bottom line, remaining bond authority, $29.8 million, and that's to be issued, that's what we could use for this.
Yes.
So if we went with Water School, we'd have to make up roughly $5 million, whereas Chapel Hill, 20, 25. Would we be able to cover either one of those out of reserves or revenue without having to request another bond issue? Maybe.
I'm trying to think the best way to answer this. When we issue the bonds, we'll have to raise rates to cover that bond payment. And then it's a matter of how much additional we're going to need to raise rates, depending on which option we choose. If you go with the $56 billion option, then we'll have to raise rates a significant amount. And I don't know what that number is. Whereas the $34.9 million, probably not as much. We may have some reserves in there, but to do other projects, we're still going to need to raise rates. So, because now you're taking away from the future projects we already have planned.
Understand. So either, regardless which way we go, like you said, there's going to be a rate increase associated with this, whether to pay for the bonds and to make up the difference.
Yes.
Or we go back, even if we do another bond, do another bond vote, if it were approved, again, same thing. We'd still have to raise rates to pay for those bonds as well. Okay. Thank you.
All right, Betsy.
I had the same question.
All right, Nick.
Very efficient.
Is there any money left from the bond authority that we've already issued? We've already issued bond authority for part of what we're doing already, right?
Right, and that's
seems a pipe dream to me as I ask it, but is there anything remaining from that, what's already been bonded?
Right, so most of it we're spending on the Purchase substation and Bolstead substation upgrades. I believe we still have some money in the Mill Creek substation project that we could move into this.
You don't have any project. Idea how much that is?
I think it's about $3 million.
Mm. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Valerie.
When we did our study to project expected rate increases, was this project considered in our plans for
the transmission line? No, not this expense. I mean, at the time we thought the bonds would cover it, and that was incorporated into the study, but
our most recent study,
the one in 20, it was probably 3 years ago, whenever that one was.
Time
four
flies.
Years ago.
Not the one we used with our last budget cycle.
Correct.
We're looking at
right,
two
not,
and a half,
not
two
the,
to two and a
not
half
not for the FY 26 budget.
26,
correct.
27, and going forward at
correct
2.5%, give or take,
right
every year. Okay, so
right, that did not include us issuing these bonds
because you're currently in the process of doing the latest cost of service study for electric. Is
not
that
for electric? No,
it's for
that's
water,
for solid waste water and sewer.
Did you have a clarifying with that, Valerie?
Don kind of clarified for me.
Right. The forecast that we gave you for the FY26 budget, that did not include issuing bonds for this.
When would we need to start that kind of increase? What budget would that go with?
Usually once you issue the bonds is when you do the rate increase.
Would we need to do a new study?
No, we would just need to do some forecasting, some evaluation. I mean, we will plan to do a new study. We plan to do those every 5 years anyway, about those cost of service studies. So we'll be coming up on one fairly quickly. Yeah. We can identify what the rate needs to be to cover these bonds. And then the cost of service would help us tweak that so that it's more refined.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions for this? Okay, so the intent now is we'll go into closed session to have conversations around the load shedding and any sort of risk conversation that we need to have to help us make our decision, and then for us to come back into open session to continue this discussion to then give guidance to the utility on next steps. Okay. So I'll make a motion that the City Council of the City of Columbia in Missouri to immediately go into a closed meeting in Conference Room 2A of City Hall to discuss leasing, purchasing, or sale of real estate by a public governmental body where public knowledge of the transaction might adversely affect the legal consideration. Therefore, pursuant to Section 610.0212 of Revised Statutes of Missouri and existing or proposed security systems and structural plans of real property owned or leased by a public governmental body and information that is voluntarily submitted by a non-public entity owning or operating an infrastructure to any public governmental body for use by that body to devise plans for protection of the infrastructure, the public disclosure of which would threaten public safety. The disclosure of such information would impair the city's ability to protect the security or safety of persons or real property, and the public interest in non-disclosure outweighs the public interest of disclosure of the information to be discussed pursuant to Section 610.0219 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri. Can I have a second?
Second.
Second by Nick. All right. Ms. Carroll.
Yes.
Ms. Elwood.
Yes.
Ms. Sample.
Yes.
Mr. Foster.
Yes.
Mr. Waterman.
Yes.
Ms. Peters.
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo. Yes. All right, anyone that needs to go into the closed meeting, please join me in Conference Room 2A. All of y'all can hang out until we come back. Our open session for the work session on February 9th, 2026. I appreciate this. We're discussing transmission line needs in our distribution area. Aaron, I'm going to kick it back over to you to kind of answer some of those, maybe answer any questions that we have. If you have questions, I think, Valerie, you had a question that was maybe more which Eric, you'll probably just remember the question that was an open session discussion that we wanted to make sure that we brought down to here, but any sort of kind of overview that you wanted to cover?
Sure. Well, I know one of the questions asked was if we have some other remaining bond funding, and I had a minute to look it up. We do have $3.5 million existing of bond funding that we can use to start a design. You know, we could use to hire an engineering firm and start that process again.
That's in addition to the 29.8 that you mentioned. So
yes.
Okay.
We do have an additional $1 million in another project. I hesitate to pull it out of that, but if we need to, we can, and you know, put it into this project. So that would bring it up to 4.5 million.
We would be very close to being able to
get to
say
the 30,
we have to get to the 34 million.
Million
without any additional bonding. Okay.
Yes.
But an electric rate increase regardless.
Yes.
Because of a bond.
If we issue the bonds, there's a rate increase that goes with that.
Correct. A rate increase above and beyond our already expected, sort of like incremental increase of every year because of the increase in cost. Okay.
Yes.
So I think, Val, I think if I remember your question correctly, it was about our relationship to our neighboring. Do you want to ask that question again?
And back, given that we each affect all of our neighbors and vice versa, with our strengths and weaknesses and their strengths and weaknesses, are we generally good players?
So in general, the answer is yes, but we participate in two major organizations that our neighbors participate in. The first is MISO. So they're a reliability coordinator. So they coordinate reliability between its members. So Ameren and the City of Columbia both participate in MISO, and part of MISO's responsibility is to make sure that everything is going just fine. If one of our neighbors were to have a issue, Ameren associated, they would not hesitate to bring it up with us. It's not come up a lot. Central Electric does endorse something. Any improvements we make to the transmission system has a secondary benefit to everybody in the surrounding area that's really hard to quantify. The other organization is called CERC. It used to be called Southeastern Reliability Council. Now it's just called CERC, and you're supposed to know what that means. But in addition, Ameren, City of Columbia, MISO, Associated Electric also belongs to that organization, and a number of larger organizations such as TVA and Duke Energy, and they coordinate reliability for the southeastern United States.
Thanks.
Any other follow-up questions for this? I think, DeCarlene, my question to you is kind of like, so we're having this work session. Last one we had was in October of 24. You know, we got our costs back. What are the next steps on, what do you need from council on this? You follow up, you have a question before he gives us that direction.
I do have a question.
Okay.
Black and Veatch already did a lot of design, didn't they, to have to do this? I guess my question is, you know, you were saying that Black and Veatch had to do a lot of the design plans for this to give us this type of cost estimate. But now you're saying we're going to have to go out and get a whole design. Are they not the people that would do that then? Or they might be, or we have to do an RFP? So,
right.
So how do we move forward with that? And is the work that they did not, I mean, I feel like we've already paid for half of this design stuff.
Right. So if you direct us to move forward with the public improvement process for this, we would need to go through a number of public meetings. I can't predict how long that will take. And then a public hearing. And if the public hearing, you direct us to move forward with the design and construction, then we would
have to.
Then we would hire an engineering firm. We would need to go through that process, the request for qualification process to hire an engineer and move forward with that.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions before I ask DeCarlene? Yeah, Nick.
Going back in the timeline again and the previous actions that have been taken and those who've been involved, I'm wondering about and this was one of the first meetings I was a part of after being elected, was hearing from the IERMP. And at that point, there were five options, I think, under consideration. We're down to two at this point. And without digging all that up, how did we, or we may just a little bit anyway, disturb the soil, how did we get from all of those to these two? Because I know there was some difference of opinion about how they reported out.
So it was a citizen-led task force, and they were evaluating certain alternatives. My understanding is the Vauder School Nifong route was not one of the ones they evaluated. They did evaluate the Chapel Hill route. They came up with a matrix for that, for those evaluations and proposals. When it came down to staff was looking at what we believe is the most cost-effective and efficient route, which is the Vauder School Nifong route, but we also accept that the Chapel Hill route is electrically equivalent.
So IERMP did not consider Vauder School?
I don't believe so.
They didn't? Because I know I read through it, but it's been probably a year and a half ago, and I thought that was one of the options of the, as Nick said, the five.
I think in the report it was discussed, but I don't remember it in their matrix.
Okay.
Additional questions for staff? So, DeCarlin, what are the sort of next steps on this?
Yeah, so I think kind of what Aaron was saying, I think the first next step is to decide on which route we want to choose. And then we have to move forward with the public improvement process. And that's going back for our public engagement meetings, public hearings. And then we'll get to the part where we have to go into start the design part. But it's actually moving us forward with some direction on which way to go.
So I guess a clarifying question. We don't do votes at work sessions.
We do not.
But we would just basically be saying, like, showing intent. Or would this come back to a council for us to move forward? Nancy, that might be a you question for, you know, giving direction for starting the public improvement process and coming back to us. What would be the proper place to do that?
I mean, you can discuss it here and reach consensus. And if there's not clarity for the city manager, then he can have you do that at a more formal city council meeting under the report section. That'd be my suggestion where that could occur.
So the kind of basis for this is whether or not we have consensus on proceeding with going forward, knowing that you have multiple public hearings as well as additional information going out.
Public meetings.
Sorry, my apologies.
And then a public hearing. Yes.
Right, and doing your part of
the thing. And then the public hearing, after the public hearing, would be when we would vote to either go forward or to not go forward. And then that's when you would get a...
Then we go out for the RFP to get an engineer for the engineering design.
If
Vera.
I was just going to ask, is there a reason that we do the process in that order where we pick one option and then bring it to the public rather than bringing these two options to the public meeting?
That's a question I think for staff.
That's up to your discretion. What we're asking is, let's go with one and move forward. But if...
Can you just speak to why that's your recommendation?
So that we have clarity as we move forward. We have clarity in the meetings that this is the one that we plan to move forward with.
I think probably it would be more of like, if there's no... there's no consideration from council for one of the options, like, we probably wouldn't have them even ask people about it if there was no way that I would suggest, you know what I mean? Like, maybe that would be the sort of recommendation.
Sure.
That would be my thoughts. Yeah.
If we don't want to spend $56 million, then there's no sense bringing that to the public, in my opinion.
Sure. Yeah, Don.
Well, really, mine is more just a comment that, you know, we have the two options here. We see the significant difference in cost. And also, my understanding is that part of this is, again, for a redundancy standpoint. And to my mind, piggybacking this second line with the Chapel Hill line is not really addressing that redundancy, because, like you said, you mentioned earlier that, you know, the poles are built to withstand significant weather, but by the same token, we saw this past spring, we lost a couple of a transmission line for a brief time when the MRF was destroyed in the tornado. So to my mind, it would make the better option would be the Vaughter School option, again, cost and adding the redundancy by having a secondary route. So my comments.
Yeah, Nick.
What's been the involvement of the Water and Light Board and Advisory Board in this process and you bringing this to us? We haven't heard anything directly from them.
Sure. We've discussed what this work session should look like, and they gave us some input on what they thought you might want to hear, because there are some newer members on there. So they helped with that. As far as seeing the entire presentation, they're seeing it the same time you are. We do have a meeting on Wednesday where they plan to discuss this work session. And if you would like their feedback, I'm sure they would be happy to provide that as well.
Well, if they're meeting on Wednesday, do we want to wait and hear from you all the next Monday at the regular city council meeting as to just what their recommendation is and then make a decision then? Would that make people feel?
To be during staff reports, staff comments at the end, and then
It would have to be at comments at
the end. We wouldn't be able to get it on the agenda, so it would have to be at the staff report.
And that's that. I mean, it's appreciated to have that sort of feedback for this and going forward.
Yeah, and that would just delay this a week, which is
not even a
not
week.
A problem.
I mean, exactly a week. Yeah.
What's another week after 20 years?
Yeah. I think that would be appreciated. And I think so, but before we move on to kind of getting that feedback, I think some of the things that I would be interested as we move forward with this is to see that sort of communications plan that is expected that includes things like the history roadmap that Glenn passed out before. Thank you. Appreciate that. As well as, there's been the discussions on the other options that were in there and the reports that were done and why those were not. Like, why did they then score lower? It gets really confusing when you talk about the alphabet because some of them changed names. Like, in one, A became a different letter or a different number in one of the reports. So, Z maybe.
It was very confusing.
So clarifying some of those would help us to answer those questions. And then, the plan for outreach and communication to customers as well as residents nearby, either of the plans that we go forward with. Any other questions on this?
Sounds like a plan.
So I will say that from my stance in looking at these, $20 million is a big difference. I appreciate hearing from the Water and Light Advisory Board on this, but that my own personal opinion is looking at this is that's a lot of money, and I don't know whether or not the voters and our ratepayers can help with that. I think knowing the relationship with the other and the outreach that did take place with both Ameren, Boone Electric, all our providers around with trying to tie into those lines will be really helpful in us feeling confident in making this decision, because those did seem like viable options probably 10 years ago. So knowing about that it was no longer an option, I think would be really useful to know from the residents that we're hearing from. Because that's a big cost, and the risk that we have for planning for the future is a big deal. So any other feedback from council before we go on to anything else? Well, thank you. So we look forward, so we will expect during staff comments on Monday, our February 16th meeting, that we will hear the feedback from Water and Light Advisory Board on recommendations. And then at that meeting, council will give direction on next steps with a public improvement for transmission line improvements. Okay. Thank you for that. Is there anything else for the good of the cause? I will just say one thing I will be sharing out is that in relation to electric, one of our major partners that we have in Sykeston, the power plant there is looking to potentially shut down and they're doing their strategic plan. So I'll probably be sharing a letter with council that will do for encouraging them to look at alternative energies as well as gas generation and other things on behalf of the, because we're a large customer of theirs, to encourage them to do that process. So I'll share that out and maybe ask you all for your opinion on Monday. Anything else? All right, I'll go ahead and close our work session at 7:58. Thank you.